Free socks. Welcome to the Soul Nation Show!
Guns N' Roses, Welcome to the Jungle, also known as the Phil Nason Show. And we're happy to have you here. It is a Wednesday afternoon, April the 17th, 2013. And before I begin, we want to offer our heartfelt sympathy to the victims of the bombing, whatever you want to call it, the terrorist act, the insane act that occurred at the Boston Marathon. We definitely here at the Phil Nason Show have great sympathy for these types of events. It's horrifying, it's horrific, it's cowardly, it's flat out crap. And we denounce this type of crap. Hope they catch the guy and hang him by his toe somewhere. That's what I hope. But again, our heartfelt sympathy goes out to the victims and their families of this terrible, terrible tragedy. And tonight we're going to talk some basketball. We're going to talk about something I thought was a tragedy as well, not to make light of the other. And doing so with me is our normal Wednesday guest from sports-kings.com/pass the bill, Mr. Andy Flint. Andy, what's up, man? How are you tonight?
I'm pretty good, Phil. I mean, other than, you know, the tragedy that happened in Boston that you already mentioned, I mean, I think, you know, it's obviously horrible, but personally, I'm okay. I'm doing good tonight and ready to talk some basketball, excited for the playoffs.
Yeah, me too. You know, it's weird because yesterday, see, I don't turn on my TV in the morning when I get up. I don't have time. I don't even think the TV works. It hasn't been on since the U.S. Open last year. But needless to say, I'm looking at my fantasy basketball scores, and it shows that Boston had a cancellation, and I thought it was weather-related at first. And lo and behold, I stumble across this atrocious act, and it is awfully upsetting. And I'll tell you something that upset the basketball world, or at least the thinking, realistic, logical, actual fans of the game world. Kobe Bryant ruptured his Achilles. What did you think about that when you saw it?
I mean, you know, the weirdest part about Kobe's injury is it didn't look that bad when he did it. I mean, if you look at the play, he kind of, had his back to Harrison Barnes almost in a posted up fashion at the 3-point line, caught the ball. And Barnes was being kind of physical with him. Again, I disagree with the foul Barnes was called for on the play, but, you know, Kobe kind of went around him and just, his leg gave out. And, you know, it turned out to be his Achilles. He gets up and nails the two free throws and leaves. And you could tell Kobe was frustrated. He obviously knew it was bad from the get-go. I mean, his body, obviously, he understands these things. But hitting the free throws and just kind of walking away, Kobe's a warrior. I mean, I don't know many guys who blow out their Achilles and just take it like a man, make their free throws and head off the court. I mean, not to take a dig at LeBron, but we watched him getting carried off the court for leg cramps. We watched Paul Pierce the one year looked like he got shot, and then 5 seconds later he was running down the tunnel like everything was fine. So we've seen some crazy things, and for Kobe to just kind of shrug off the torn Achilles and take it like a man is something special. I think he's half cyborg.
He could be. But I remember playing a fast-pitch softball game in New Zealand, and I remember this guy, he hit a ball in the gap, and he rounded first, and it sounded like a gunshot went off. And his Achilles finally gave out completely on his way to third, and he just collapsed. This was a big guy. They're pretty proud down there. And he couldn't leave on his own. But I thought that was pretty interesting that Kobe was able to knock down those free throws because he knew something was wrong. He could feel it. Now, I was listening to, I don't remember which program it was this morning or Tuesday morning, and they were saying, or maybe it was Monday, either way, it doesn't matter, but they were saying that part of the reason that he was able to do what he did is because that left ankle is so heavily taped. You know, Kobe's always taped up pretty strong. And they said it's probably that reason and that reason alone that he was able to do it. But whatever, you still have to be in pain. That's a serious thing. You know, that's like a rubber band snapping. You know, that's the most dangerous, painful injury you can get next to getting your head split open. But what does that do with the Lakers? Because the Lakers are still winning. And it's amazing. There's so many things behind this injury too, Andy. There's so much speculation going around. A lot of people are blaming Mike D'Antoni, and I'd be careful if I were them, because once you start accusing people of or coaches of injuring players because of the way they coach, you can open yourself up for a lawsuit. But what do you think about all this? D'Antoni's to blame because Kobe plays 46 minutes or averaged 46 minutes this month. I personally think that's hogwash. What do you think?
You know, I don't really I had to research this because obviously I'm no MD. And the few reports that I read, because there's a few different reports from, you know, Kobe's actual doctors, the Lakers doctors, that sort of thing, and just, you know, there's plenty of other doctors that were willing to step up, obviously, for their 15 minutes of fame to talk about Kobe's injury. And everyone says, you know, including guys in the league office and everything, that that type of an injury doesn't really have anything to do with the amount of minutes you play. I think you, with minutes play, you're more looking at something like maybe, you know, injuring your back or your knees wearing down or something like that. From what I've read, and again, I'm no medical profession here, but professional here, but the Achilles injury really wouldn't really reflect heavy minutes. So, you know, with that said, I think, you know, it's easy to blame somebody, especially Mike D'Antoni at this point, especially if you're a Lakers fan. I mean, he's the guy to point the fingers at when they're not pointing them at Dwight Howard. So, yeah, I think I agree with you. It seems like it's hogwash from everything that I was able to dig up.
Yeah, you know, that's the funny thing is that people like to place a lot of blame. But injuries happen to athletes. Sure, fatigue sets in, but still in all, what people forget is that Kobe Bryant runs that team. Kobe Bryant, now he didn't run it with Phil Jackson, and there were times when Phil Jackson would say, get over here. And Kobe would say, no. And then Phil Jackson would look at him again and point to the bench, get over here. And Kobe would have to go sit down, even if it was for 30 seconds, 2 minutes, 2.5 minutes, whatever. Kobe's not going to have that same relationship with Mike D'Antoni. In fact, they claim, Mike D'Antoni says they all had a meeting about this, him, Mitch Kupchak, Jim Buss, and Kobe, about how many minutes he wanted to play, and Kobe said, leave me alone, I'm going to play. I want to play these minutes. So what are you going to say about that? I don't think Kobe's blaming anybody. He knows what happened. He cut and tore it. That's what happens.
Yeah, he's not blaming anybody. And one of the best quotes I read from a doctor was saying that you can literally just be walking and step off of a curb and tear your Achilles. It's a tear. It's not, you know, it's not something to do with overuse of muscles and the muscles being swollen or anything like that. Those are usually the things attributed with, you know, heavy playing or maybe a plantar fascia injury or something like that. I mean, it's totally just a freak accident. You know, and maybe his age plays into it a little bit. He's, you know, he's not 22 years old. But yeah, the heavy minutes, it just doesn't seem to stick at all.
I remember one time when I was at a tennis tournament and it was amazingly hot. And I had won my match and I thought I hydrated enough afterwards. And I was sleeping in the bed, man, and I caught a cramp in my left lower leg. And I snapped, you know, to a tension leg. You know what I mean, when you get one of those nasty cramps. And I tore my calf in my bed. I mean, it was amazing. I never thought that could be possible. But these things happen every day. People get injured every day. And the thing is what people think is because Kobe didn't go down right away like, say, Chauncey Billups did or Dominique Wilkins did or some other or Isaiah Thomas did, that it wasn't that serious. But it was. I think a lot of people like to degrade Kobe, and I think that's unfair. I think he's proven himself time and time again. He'll go down as one of the top 10 basketball players of all time. What does that do, though, for him now? He'll probably come back. Have you heard the same things I have about people running their mouths about amnesty and Kobe Bryant? Does that make sense?
I mean... that's such a tough question, Phil, and I've been back and forth with this on Twitter for the past couple of days, and we even had a guy from Pass the Pill, Ruben. He did up a story, you know, not saying the Lakers should amnesty Kobe, but if they were to amnesty Kobe, it was kind of a top five destinations where he could land. And I mean, I guess the amnesty talk is fair. I think, to me, I'm not a Lakers fan. You know, I am a fan of Kobe Bryant in a sense. I'm not a fan of Kobe Bryant in a sense that, you know, I love the guy, I defend everything he does, but I do respect him as a player. You know, I think he's the best player of his generation, et cetera. But I think from a totally from a business standpoint, I think amnestying Kobe isn't the worst thought. And that's, you know, not a slight at Kobe, but I mean, even without the injury, it might not be the worst idea in the world. I mean, the chunk of change, and I don't have it sitting in front of me because honestly, I hadn't planned for you to ask me this question. You know, you saw the way I kind of hesitated and reacted there at the beginning. But I think, you know, to amnesty him, I think if you're the Lakers, I think they're kind of one of the teams that hold themselves to a higher standard. So I don't know that they would necessarily amnesty Kobe Bryant being, you know, what Kobe's done for that team since he's been there. But from a business standpoint and from a rebuilding standpoint, I think, you know, maybe it's not the worst thing in the world. I mean, he's going to make $30 million in 2013-14. When he's 35 years old, $30 million, and it's a little over $30 million. It's almost $30.5 million. So, yeah, I mean, the thing that's abundantly clear at this point, whether people like it or not, and I know people don't, is the future of that team is Dwight Howard at this point. The recent chatter is that Dwight Howard intends to stay. Now, we've seen this kind of internal battle with Dwight before. But I think it seems like at this point he's going to stay a Laker. He's going to re-sign. So whether Kobe, you know, comes back next season and he's 100% or 50% or what have you, whether it takes him 6 months, which would roughly have him ready for the start of the season, or whether it takes 9 months, I mean, I feel like he's going to come back. He's going to try to make the comeback. But this team moving forward has to be tailored for Dwight Howard, not Kobe Bryant. And, I mean, it's going to kind of put the Lakers – and Kobe in a funny situation, I think, because in the offseason, the Lakers, you know, their brass are going to have to do whatever they can to kind of make that team more compatible with Dwight Howard, which would be ideally something like you would have seen in Orlando, which is, you know, the shooters. They need the shooters to, and that would actually be good for a Mike D'Antoni system if they decide to keep the guy around, is shooters, and they play outside in versus outside or inside out. And then you don't have a guy like Kobe, you know, demanding the ball. And I'm not saying Kobe's brand is a bad brand of basketball, but I just don't feel like it works with Dwight Howard. And the Lakers are going to have to make a choice on Kobe or Dwight. And you know, what do? You want to stay loyal to your guy who's been there, but at the same time, you have a future to build here. And you have to think about the business of things, winning basketball games in 3 years opposed to right now.
Yeah, you made a lot of statements there. And I figured you'd just be ready for the amnesty question. That's why I didn't say anything. But anyway, yeah, $30 million he's owed next year. The thing is, if you're the Lakers, you don't want Kobe Bryant to play for someone else. And if they amnesty him, that means he can't return to the Lakers for one season. So he would be free to go wherever he'd like. And you don't want him coming back and beating people. Now, granted, when he does come back, his minutes are going to be tailored. He'll probably have to play 20, 21 minutes. He won't be the same Kobe Bryant that we're used to seeing. I'm not so sure he's even going to want that. He came out prior to this injury and said, I'm not going to hang around and average 21, 22 points a game. Meaning that once it's over, he knows when it's going to be. He's not just going to be, in his terms, mediocre, which would be exceptional for most people. And that's the type of standard that he's always set for himself. So if you're the Lakers, you don't want to let that young fella go and play for someone else, especially if it could be his last year.
Clippers.
Yeah, or whoever. Yeah, he might do that. And I don't think that there is one single NBA team that wouldn't try to sign him. I mean, he is valuable, even at 20 minutes.
Absolutely.
Dwight Howard, though. You know something, man? I think this guy has issues, and I'm not going to like get myself into a legal corner, but you don't know what to believe with that guy. 1 minute he's here, 1 minute he's gone. 1 minute he doesn't want to return to Orlando, and he's going to leave, and he wants to go to Brooklyn, and then the next day he signs an extension and takes his player option. He just doesn't make sense. I personally think that if he returns to the Lakers and re-signs, that he will not be able to play with D'Antoni because this is not going to work. he's going to want a coach who's going to give him the rock. And D'Antoni doesn't want to. That's not how he works. And Dwight Howard, I think there's a big issue there. I think Dwight or D'Antoni is going to be the scapegoat once again, unfortunately. I think he's become a professional scapegoat.
I don't think he's the right guy for the job, though. I mean, that's nothing against D'Antoni. I don't know. I tried to be really glass half full when this first happened, and I remember telling Frank Santos on the air that, you know, I thought this was going to work because of Steve Nash mainly. But I feel like D'Antoni, unfortunately, was put in a bad situation with the Lakers. I just don't think it was a team that he really could mesh with. And you're right, Dwight Howard is all wrong for him. I was trying to make the comparison with the shooters with D'Antoni and ball movement with Dwight manning the paint. But yeah, if D'Antoni had to pick one superstar to you know, coach, it's not Dwight Howard.
No, it's more Kobe Bryant, really. And one of the biggest issues with the Lakers is the Steve Nash. You know, Nash wanted D'Antoni there, and that's what they figured they could do. And Nash got hurt. Nash is still out. Who knows with him? I think he's finished, by the way. But Paul Gasol, he benched Paul Gasol. I think this whole thing started, I think they jumped the gun a little too quickly by firing Mike Brown. I think Jim Buss did this on purpose. He fired Mike Brown so he could diss Phil Jackson. And the reason I think this is because, never forget something, brothers don't like it when their sisters are getting played. And don't forget, for the longest time, Jeannie was just his girlfriend. His being Phil Jackson's. So there might be something to play there too. And D'Antoni, I thought D'Antoni was just nothing but brought in to be the scapegoat on a team that the buses knew was going to be a bust, so to speak. I think they made some bad choices. Steve Nash, they gave him a lot of money. I thought when they first did all this, I thought, holy smokes, this is going to be good. Real good. And it just didn't gel. Perhaps it's because they didn't play together enough, which is the case, probably. When you've got Nash out for 32 games, Gasol out for over 30 games, you know, you're going to have issues. Kobe Bryant didn't play the full season. Dwight Howard will never play a full season. Meta World Peace out too. And you've got nothing left but the Land of Misfit Toys. And you can't coach at Land of the Misfit Toys in Los Angeles and expect not to catch some flack. And D'Antoni just got himself in a bad spot. I think you're right. He's a good basketball coach. He's proven that he is. But not for this bunch. No, not for this bunch.
I think the Kobe injury might honestly, and you know, I hate to be the one to say it, but I think the Kobe injury really might be a good thing. And that itself might be a scapegoat for the Lakers a little bit. Because I still feel like they're going to do something with Pau Gasol in the offseason. And this whole Kobe not being ready for 6 to 9 months, and if he is ready, like you alluded to, how ready is he? How much extra time after he's on the court does it take for him to actually be, you know, Kobe, or, you know, even a remnant of what Kobe once was? But I think this is an easy way for the Lakers to kind of make that, to bridge the gap into the Dwight Howard era in Los Angeles, because it's got to be what they want. I mean, at some point, I think everybody has to come to the realization that the Lakers didn't bring Dwight Howard in, you know, for one season or, you know, to necessarily be the second fiddle. They brought him in because Kobe was on his way out. So I think this is going to ease things into them, you know, making this Dwight's team officially.
Yeah, maybe so, but I still am not convinced that Dwight Howard's going to re-sign with L.A. I think he's going to wind up in Houston.
Until it dries, anything's possible with Dwight Howard. I agree there.
Because Houston would be a very tax-friendly area, you know. He doesn't have to pay state income tax. They got a heck of a young team down there. Kevin McHale's done a pretty good job with them, and he would be a perfect fit for the Houston Rockets, and they're upside down. Mentally challenged team who played pretty good at times. But now with the Lakers, now you've got this whole thing where they're still in the hunt. Utah just doesn't want to win, man. They just don't know how to finish, do they?
Well, I mean, you know, they did have the benefit of a lighter schedule than LA for sure. I mean, if you think about it in this way, LA was closing the LA Lakers, to be clear, we're closing their last two games against the Spurs, who they beat without Kobe. I mean, Dwight Howard had a pretty good game there. I don't remember exactly what his stat line was. I feel like it was like 25 and 17 rebounds. Steve Blake actually had a good game too. Surprise. But and then they closed with the Houston Rockets, which is very interesting given the current situation in the West there down towards the bottom. But then on the flip side of that, you have the Utah Jazz closing out with the dreadful Minnesota Timberwolves two games. And then they're going to play Memphis, who for a while there, it looked like Memphis, you know, might not really have anything to play for there at the end, but now it looks like they're going to. I think, you know, for Utah, the situation they put themselves in now is the fact that not only do they need to beat the Grizzlies, they now need to have the Lakers lose to the Rockets too. And you can bet all the money in your wallet right now that the Rockets really, really want to beat the Lakers too, because if the Lakers do beat the Rockets, then not only do the Lakers get in the playoffs, but the Lakers get that 7 seed from the Rockets. So that's going to be a very interesting game. And the Utah game should be ending just about the time that that Lakers-Rocket game starts. So it's going to be a very exciting, very, very exciting night.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. Here's how I think it's all going to play out. L.A. is going to wind up with the 7th seed.
I think so, too. Well, you got to think, too, the Jazz are playing at Memphis, and the Rockets are playing at Los Angeles. So, to me, if the Lakers blow this, if you could see me now, it's a facepalm, because everything kind of, the stars aligned for them. They, you know, they beat San Antonio despite not having Kobe. And then, you know, they get to face the Rockets, who are no slouch, but they get to face them at home, whereas Utah faces Memphis, who's actually going to play for something now, which it could have been the other way around. They might not have been playing for something, and they're going to face Memphis on the road. And not only that, but the Lakers get to go into their game with the Rockets already knowing the outcome of whether they have to win or lose, because if Utah loses to Memphis, it's all over for them, and the Lakers advance whether they win or not. But then they'll be playing for the 7th seed. Regardless.
Well, the Lakers are going to play big man ball now. They have to, and they seem to be doing all right. Dwight Howard and Gasol seem to be getting a little bit of chemistry there.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't rule them out.
Not at all. I think if Nash comes back, which, you know, you said you don't think he will. I don't know if he will. They were hoping to have him back for San Antonio. That obviously didn't happen. You know, he's day-to-day right now, and I think if Nash comes back, that team could be very dangerous. And again, I don't mean to bag on Kobe, because, you know, you people listening have to realize that I love Kobe's game. I do respect Kobe a ton. But the Kobe, I think two things. Kobe doesn't work with Dwight. I already said that. This isn't Shaquille and Kobe. And, you know, this isn't the triangle offense, obviously. And then Kobe doesn't work with Steve Nash either. I think a lot of Kobe's game is predicated upon having the ball in his hands. And that, you know, isn't necessarily a bad thing. But if you're Steve Nash, that kind of makes you useless in many ways when Kobe has the ball, because Nash needs the ball. I think Howard and Gasol with Nash, with no Kobe, Kobe over on the bench, is kind of a dangerous thing, because Dwight Howard was the best pick and roll finisher in the league coming to the Lakers this year. Steve Nash was the best pick and roll distributor coming into this year. And then Pau Gasol was like number 14th or 15th as a pick and roll finisher. So Steve Nash has the one in, you know, a top 15 or a top 20 pick and roll finishers when he's the best pick and roll distributor in the league. That's dangerous. I mean, that's pick and roll, and you can play the pick and pop with Gasol. It's just dangerous, nasty ball. And, you know, they do have a few guys who have stepped up. Earl Clark and Antoine Jameson's playing a lot better lately. Even, you know, Steve Blake's had some solid minutes. So Jody Meeks as well. So I think that they, with Nash, they could run something. And you know, if they get that 7th seed, San Antonio's a little banged up. I'm not going to project the Lakers beating San Antonio, but I think with a star power team like the Lakers have, it could happen.
Oh, yeah, sure. Sure it can. And that's just it. They might be better without Kobe. And you're right. They might be. And let's not forget something, too. Pau Gasol is a hell of a passer.
Absolutely.
And with that kind of offense, with a Nash and a Gasol and a Howard busting loose and cutting, they could be real dangerous. And you're not going to find a better big man combination than those two. I don't care what anyone says. Offensively, anyway, those two are something. We'll have to see how it all shakes out. Anyway, what we're going to do is take a break. And when we return, we're going to take a look at the Eastern Conference. The playoffs begin this weekend. And we're going to just take a look at that because just about all those are set. We'll be right back.
This Week in Tennis is a weekly tennis program covering all aspects of professional tennis. The most controversial tennis show anywhere deals with issues no one seems to want to touch. For music and hard-hitting commentary, please visit philnaces.com. Been dreaming of that Greek vacation? Well, if you have, then you might want to check out the folks at the Aridi Grand Hotel, located in beautiful Corfu, Greece. Come experience world-class cuisine, as well as the hospitality that Greece is legendary for at the Aridi Grand Hotel. You can find them at aridihotel.com or email them at reservations@aridihotel.com. Stitcher Smart Radio is an award-winning, free mobile application that lets you listen to your favorite shows and discover the best of news, entertainment, and sports on demand. Now you don't even need a Wi-Fi or a cell connection to listen to shows like The Phil Nason Show. Never miss another show. It's real simple. Just go to Stitcher.com and download the free app today. And never miss another Phil Nason Show. Hi, this is Phil Nason from The Phil Nason Show and This Week in Tennis. When I'm looking for sports information, my first stop, as well as yours should be, sports-kings.com. Great information, scores, highlights, and exceptional commentary. You can find it all there at sports-kings.com.
Ladies and gentlemen,
tonight we come together.
Cool. And I think it's cool.
I'd rather see someone do that than put something on that's, well, just crap. It's all about
tonight. Phil Nason.
Some of the things that these people say.
Tom Donahue.
There is no nonsense here. This isn't knucklehead theater.
Jimmy Z.
That is such twisted logic.
Alex Jones.
You heard it here first. Now it's mainstream news.
Yeah, tomorrow can wait till tomorrow.
Ah, it's a lot of fun.
I said tomorrow can wait till tomorrow. It's all about tonight.
And we'll have fun, I promise.
Yeah. Weeknights starting at 10 Eastern on the Talk Superstation.
It's all about tonight.
Welcome back to the Phil Nason Show. It's April the 17th, Wednesday afternoon. We're talking basketball. On the line with me from sports-kings.com/pass the pill is Andy Flint. Andy, the Eastern Conference is pretty much wrapped up. You got a couple little issues, though. That fifth and sixth seed issue, it looks like Chicago might overtake Atlanta and move into the fifth seed. And if that's the case, there are a couple teams I think that are going to benefit greatly from this. The first one being New York, and the second one being Indiana, because Indiana doesn't want to play Chicago. I don't think anyone wants to play Chicago first round, would you?
No, I mean, now, if I had a choice, yeah, I would obviously rather play a few of the other teams. I almost feel like I'd rather play Brooklyn than Chicago in the first round. I don't know if everybody would agree with me on that, but Chicago's a weird team. I think they can go out there and completely stink it up some nights, but it's really that defense that gets you. You don't really want to play, especially in the first round. You don't want to play, you know, if you've earned a upper seed, like a one or a two or a three or even a four, you don't really want to tango with Chicago. Just because we know that they're super physical, their defense rules all. when it, you know, when it comes to playing against them, and defense in the playoffs rules all. So I feel like I've said this before on the program, the Bulls, the Pacers, Memphis, teams like that, those games, the officials kind of let it go a little more. And I think it's because the amount of fouls committed in those types of games are more. So the officials, you know, they can't be blowing the whistle every 2 seconds. I think those games are a little more physical. They let it go a little more. And that's just going to increase in the playoffs. So, yeah, you don't want to play the Bulls in the first round. So I think I agree with you that I think Chicago's going to slip up into that five spot, because they have, their last game is going to be the Wizards in Chicago, and they only need to win that at this point. Atlanta got smacked by the Raptors Tuesday night. And then Atlanta has the Knicks at Madison Square Garden for their final game. And I feel like the Knicks probably won't play their starters very much. So Atlanta could win that game, but it's not going to matter as long as Chicago beats the Wizards, because Chicago owns the tiebreaker over Atlanta. So I see Chicago in the fifth seed, Atlanta in the sixth.
And if that's the case, then it's Miami takes on Milwaukee. New York takes on Boston. Indiana would take on Atlanta. Chicago would take on Brooklyn. And this is perfect for New York, because New York doesn't have to look at Chicago or Miami till the final. And those are the two teams. Well, I'll be honest with you. I think that New York would love to play Miami right off the bat, but that isn't the case. Let's look at the first series, Miami and Milwaukee. Sheesh, Milwaukee's awful, I think. I call them the Rucker Park Street Legends, and and the thing is some young fellas from Rucker Park wrote to me and says, hey, don't embarrass us like that. Come on, Flash. Okay, you know what, dudes? You're right. You're better than those guys.
Oh.
You're much better than those guys. Those guys are awful. I mean, seriously, this is one of the craziest teams I've ever seen, is the Milwaukee Bucks. And there's, you know, when you lose a coach, when a coach like Scott Skiles just walks off, Scott Skiles is the most competitive guy on earth. And when you see a kid like him walk off because he can't coach this bunch, you know something's not right. The thing about Milwaukee, this team is weird, is one of these guys, either Monte Ellis or Brandon Jennings, will be playing their final series as a Milwaukee Buck. One of those guys are going to go. I don't think that they play well together, but I'll tell you who I really like on this team is Ilyasova. I think he has really definitely come out and just came into his own this year. Larry Sanders is injured, so this could be even a worse thing for Milwaukee, because Samuel Dellenbert, while he's adequate, he is no Larry Sanders. Does Milwaukee even have a puncher's chance of beating Miami?
No, absolutely not.
That was pretty emphatic.
I don't know if they're going to win a game. I mean, I think the one and only thing that the Milwaukee Bucks have going for them against, you know, a team, against anybody in the playoffs, really, I think personally, is the fact that Monte Ellis and or Brandon Jennings, one of those guys can get hot and light you up for 40 or 50 points. And it can happen. I mean, Jennings scored 50 in his rookie year. I'm not predicting anybody that, you know, one of them is going to score 50 points, but they're scorers. So when you talk about a puncher's chance, I call it, you know, a scorer's chance in the NBA. And I think, you know, they could take a game. I wouldn't get that series any further than than five games. But I think if I'm calling it, I would say four games. And you alluded to Brandon Jennings or Monte Ellis's last year. I think they're both gone. Monte Ellis has already said that he's, you know, going to test free agency. That's the nice way of saying, I'm sick of playing with guys that are the same player as me. You know, the poor kid has had the misfortune of playing with Baron Davis. And that was back when we kind of thought Monte Ellis was a point guard, but he was playing with Baron Davis, who obviously is a guy at that point who needed the ball in his hands to pass it. You know, he's a phenomenal passer then. Then he played with Steph Curry, who those two are similar players. and now he's playing with Brandon Jennings. I don't like Monte Ellis paired with all these, you know, guys that need the ball. Jennings is a scorer. Monte Ellis is a scorer. Steph Curry was a scorer. Monte Ellis is a scorer. I don't like it. I think Ellis has to get himself a change of scenery. And I feel like Brandon Jennings is pissed off enough with the Bucks this year that he's going to look for something else too. So I feel like I expect that team to be led by Larry Sanders and J.J. Redick next season, and Ilya Sova, obviously. So look forward to Milwaukee not making the playoffs after this season.
I'll tell you what, they're probably kicking themselves for letting go of Tobias Harris, too.
I love him for it. I'll send him a kiss inside of an envelope.
Me too. I'll tell you what, that made my fantasy team come alive. But, yeah, you know the problem with Milwaukee, too, is they average 14 turnovers a game. Miami kills you because of turnovers. They score points off your turnovers. That's why they don't beat the Knicks, because the Knicks don't make turnovers.
Yeah, Milwaukee's going to average 20 a game in that series.
Sure, and that'll give Miami at least 22 points right there, because that's what they do. And the other thing with Milwaukee, they don't necessarily get back too good on defense, and Miami likes to throw that touchdown pass. It's all over. Four games. I think you're right. Miami's a good team, though. There's no doubt about it, but they're not a great. I don't think they're as great as everyone thinks, but they will get past this bunch. There's no question. I mean, if you lose to Milwaukee, you're really lame. I have to say that. They're the worst team in the entire playoffs, unless Utah makes it, because Utah's even worse.
But I think Utah would beat Milwaukee.
Okay, maybe. Maybe you're right.
I think it's a good series. I think it might go 7, maybe 6, something like that. I think Utah would overall dominate them inside. But, yeah, you're right. I think Milwaukee's the worst team in the playoffs.
Yeah, they're definitely probably not so good. But the other one that's interesting from a rivalry and a historical standpoint are the New York Knicks taking on the Boston Celtics. The Knicks just have been crazy good this year. I mean, crazy good. I'm really impressed by these guys. I knew that they were going to be okay. I predicted them to win 55 games. I think they're going to wind up winning 54. But they wrapped up the second seed. They defeated their critics. Mike Woodson is up for Coach of the Year. I can't stand the guy personally. But needless to say, it doesn't matter. I don't work for the Knicks. I can hate on him all I like. It doesn't matter. Bottom line is they're taking down the Celtics. At the beginning of the season when they played, it was a very physical. There was a lot of blah, blah, blah going on with Carmelo and Honey Nut Cheerios and Kevin Garnett and this and that, a few other things. But it looks like the Celtics' roar and bite has been muzzled. They don't seem to be the same type of team in terms of physicality. They're certainly not the same type of team without Rajon Rondo offensively. That Rondo brings a completely different dimension to things and causes quite a few problems. What do you see about this series that's intriguing to you?
Well, let me start off by saying that I think, you know, when Rondo went out for the Celtics, let's start there. When Rondo went out, I mean, I'm not even going to, you know, try to remember what they went right away. But, you know, they did fairly well. They fared pretty well without Rondo for a while. And then you had all the people saying, you know, is Boston better without Rondo? No, smack yourself in the face. Boston's not better without Rondo. That's, you know, just a terrible idea to even have in your head. And especially in a playoff series, because Rondo, you know, is probably the most physical point guard in the NBA when it comes to playing defense. Even offensively, the guy's physical. He tests you. He rebounds the ball. He's just a phenomenal player. If he could get a consistent jump shot, he's a top five player in this league, I believe. Losing Rondo hurts. Paul Pierce, not the same guy. He's lost a step. He's not a great defender anymore. KG's been banged up. You know, the defense is still there, but, you know, how much? I think a guy like Tyson Chandler's really going to give it to Kevin Garnett in this series. Rasheed Wallace is back and healthy. That's going to be the most interesting matchup in the world ever. Rasheed Wallace and Kevin Garnett, even at their age. It's sad that I'm saying that in a way, but it's going to be awesome. It's going to be, to quote the kids, epic. I think This battle is going to be awesome. And, you know, it's, I don't think it'll be a sweep. I don't think the Knicks will win it in five. I think, you know, six is more of the magic number. And Boston might take them to seven, because one thing about Boston I can say is that they're very well coached. I think that they have, you know, the second best coach in the NBA behind Greg Popovich and Doc Rivers. I love Doc. I respect him tremendously, even though, you know, he's the coach of Boston, who I don't particularly like. But, yeah, I think they have some experienced guys in Pierce and Garnett, and they still have the guys like Avery Bradley and Jeff Green, these X-Factor type guys, even a Courtney Lee. You know, and I think they'll get some stuff done, and I think they'll win some games on their own home court. But I think overall the Knicks have just been phenomenal. You know, the interesting thing about the Knicks, Phil, is they started off so hot and everybody was going nuts. And, you know, I live in New York, not in the city, but in New York. So the majority of the people I know, especially on something like Facebook, they love the Knicks. They're Knicks fans. So everybody was going crazy and you had to listen to it. And then they had a bit of a slide. They battled some injuries and they didn't do so well. Now they're back to playing great ball. J.R. Smith is the sixth man of the year. Mike Woodson is definitely up for coach of the year. And Carmelo Anthony is still very much in the MVP talk. So I think this Knicks team came to play basketball and they look pretty rugged.
Yeah, I think I'm not so sure that Rasheed Wallace is going to be as big a factor as Kenyon Martin will be. I think that was a great pickup. It should have happened about 4 or 5 weeks earlier. I'm sad to say that it didn't. But
Lord forgive me for getting about Kmart. One of my favorite players ever, I think, is Kenyon Martin. But yeah,
he forgives you. But yeah, you know, the thing with the Knicks, what always does the Knicks in are athletic guards. And I don't think that the Celtics have athletic guards as the Knicks do. So the Knicks should be all right there. The Knicks do not hurt themselves at all. They are very good at protecting the ball on the offensive end. When you're only averaging 11.5 turnovers a game, you're doing something well. They definitely get things done offensively. Of course, everything's around Carmelo Anthony. I think one of the factors that people aren't talking about is J.R. Smith. I've said this all year, and I'll continue to say this throughout J.R. Smith's career, no matter what he does, and I'm not degrading him in any way. It's just who he is. Is that all these games that he shoots you in, he will also shoot you out. If you remember, and you brought up the fact that the Knicks got off to this flying start, and yeah, sure, everyone was ecstatic. Then they cooled off, and they only played 500 ball for 30 games or so. A lot of that had to do with the fact, well, two reasons. One, Amari Stoudemire came back and jinxed the team, which is normal for him. And two, J.R. Smith was not shooting well. He was taking crazy, crazy shots. And one thing that, even though I'm not a fan of Mike Woodson, I was a very big fan of him as a player, though, I must say this. But as a coach, I'm not so big on. But someone, either him or maybe the Twitter gods or whoever, convinced J.R. Smith to stop shooting so many threes and start going to the cup. And once he started to do that, what happened is teams started, you saw what happened with Miami. They double-teamed him, and a lot of other guys scored big. The only problem I have, though, well, it's not a problem. It's a beautiful thing when it works, is their offense really revolves around the three-point shot. They don't really have a system. Systems are necessary to win championships, I think, anyway. But you live by the three, you die by the three. The first 24 games, they live by the three. This, in those 30 games in the middle there, they, you know, stunk the joint up. And then they got hot again. Can they continue over and carry over? I hope so. I think that even if they go a little stale from the three, I think Carmelo Anthony's playing at a different level. He's playing playoff basketball. What he did in Miami and scored 50 points, he shot jump shots. Playoff basketball is a half-court game, and when you're in a half-court game and you've got someone at the stretch four shooting the ball like he does, they're too dangerous. I say five games, and Boston goes bye-bye.
I mean, yeah, it's possible. I said, I think more along the lines of six, but yeah, five could happen. I think when you talk about J.R. Smith, you're right. He's in this season. You know, he's the whole season, but really since the All-Star break, he's become a better basketball player. I used to, you know, refer to him along with some other guys like Jamal Crawford, Caron Butler. These guys are great bad shot makers. They make bad shots and make tough shots. And I haven't seen that as much out of JR the second half of the season. I thought he's become more selective. He doesn't love every shot he sees. And I think, you know, a little bit of that has to do with buying into the system. But I think the Knicks defense is going to be pretty stingy, you know, with the aforementioned Kenyon Martin. And we have Rasheed Wallace, and you have guys, the Tyson Chandler, even Jason Kidd, guys. And Pablo Prigioni is another one who's, I think, a stingy little defender when he wants to be. So I think that these guys, you know, are going to – these role players, besides the Carmelo Anthonys and the J.R. Smiths, I think these other guys are going to come together, unify Shump, another great defender, and they're going to lock teams down in the half court. And, you know, if they have to bury the three to beat you, that's going to be a plus if they can, you know, make 15, 20 threes in a game. And yeah, they're just going to overpower the Boston Celtics in the first round. On to the second round for the New York Knickerbockers.
We hope so, because if they don't make it past the first round, I don't care how many games Mike Woodson's team won, Mike Woodson's history. Here's what will happen. I can tell you this from a lifetime of experience in this. If the Knicks don't get past the first round, two things are going to happen. The city of New York is going to turn on Carmelo Anthony, and rightly so. And two, they're going to go after Mike Woodson. You know, I've been hard on Mike Woodson this year, really hard. In fact, the New York Knicks podcast is the same. Both of us have been just hammering away at Woodson since day one, since this first of it all, when he took over for D'Antoni. Not because I was a big D'Antoni fan, but D'Antoni would be a better coach for this team. This team would work, but Carmelo didn't like him. So anyway, but the thing is this, you're right. I think he's going to be past the first round. If that happens, this is the worst thing that can ever happen for the Brooklyn Nets, because New York City is a New York Knicks town. Brooklyn is not part of the New York City town yet. They haven't earned anything, really. People don't even consider, they still consider them the New Jersey Nets. Ask any New Yorker this, they'll tell you. If the Knicks win this first round, Brooklyn, I don't care what Brooklyn does, no one's going to give a rip about them ever in New York. They might as well go back to New Jersey. Let Jay-Z sing in the Barclays Center and make his millions, because it ain't going to be happening here. But these other playoff matchups, I'm not so sure if there's going to be anything really that exciting. I don't see Brooklyn winning there anything. Atlanta either. You know, this is the thing. You know, we talk about this tomorrow with Jamie, but Atlanta is a team that seems content on one round and out, don't they?
Well, they don't have a very good team. I mean, if we're being honest, I think they have a team that, you know, can win you. I think I said at the beginning of the season, and everybody on the Kings Court podcast disagreed with me, and I think I called Atlanta to win 45 games. I think they'll probably win 44. They got smacked by the Raptors, but I think Atlanta's, you know, they're built, they have a team that's built that they can beat you on any given night. But in a playoff series where you have to see the same team, you know, for this many games, X amount of games in a row to win a series, they just don't match up terribly well. They don't really have a guy that can just light you up. I think Lou Williams would have made a little bit of a difference this year, because, you know, he was kind of being the motor charging that team in the offensive end. But Josh Smith is one of those players that kills you. He'll fall in love with a three and he'll do dumb things. And Al Horford's a great defensive player. You know, he's a solid jump shooter. He does some great things. But he's not overly great in the post. He's not going to score you 25 points. And, you know, they don't have a team to hang around it and beat good teams in the playoffs. And typically you're going to see good teams in the playoffs. They're not going to be in Indiana. They might get one game against Indiana. I don't think that they're going to, you know, really get much past five games in that series, if that is what it comes down to, which I believe that's who they'll face in the first round. I think Indiana's going to just be too defensively good. They're going to hit the glass too much, and, you know, they're just going to outscore them. They have the guards. Paul George, he's going to do some great things in that series, I believe. And, yeah, they're just – the second unit's going to kill them. That's another thing. The Hawks don't really have a great second unit, in my opinion. So I think Atlanta's done.
Well, they're always done. One and done. That's what they're. That's how they build their teams. But they have done okay. Larry Drew's done a good job. I think Chicago, if they get into the fifth seed, and I think they're going to, they're going to smash Brooklyn, and they're going to give Miami all they can handle. And that's a good thing if you're a Knicks fan, really. Because I think that Chicago is probably so underrated that it's not even funny. People like to dismiss them because Derrick Rose is gone.
Yeah.
And that was foolish. You know, and their team is, they play whatever. I don't know how much better they'd be with Derrick Rose. He certainly doesn't want, it's obvious that he doesn't want to play. So, I mean, what do you do? I think Chicago, though, could get to the conference final. They really could.
Offensively, they'd be better with Derrick Rose, obviously. But, yeah, I think I agree with you. I'm not going to give them the series against the Nets. I think I got to save that one for a later date because I'm really not sure who I would pick yet, the Nets or the Bulls. I guess I'm leaning towards the Bulls, really. So I think I'd go with the Bulls to make the upset. You know, granted, they get the fifth seed and face the Nets. But I don't think they'll beat Miami. I think that, you know, Miami beats them in five or six games. But, you know, I think they definitely can beat the Nets. I think they match up well, you know, being a good half-court team as Chicago is. But they've got to find the offense. They have to have it. Without the offense, they're not going to beat teams in the playoffs.
Yeah, but they play hard-nosed with Miami. They push Miami around pretty good. LeBron doesn't like to be touched, and he made that clear. And there's some issues in Miami still, you know. You don't know what's going to happen with Dwayne Wade. LeBron James is not going to win the Eastern Conference and go to the finals on his own. And that's a fact. I don't know what's going to happen with Wade. I think he's more injured than they let on. He better be at more than 50%. Don't forget that during that 27-game streak, most of that time, Derrick Rose or Dwayne Wade was playing the way Dwayne Wade always did. And when that stopped, he stopped. They stopped. They need those two. LeBron cannot carry that team by himself, not through the playoffs. He doesn't like the physical play, and Chicago's going to go out there and just maul him. That's what I would do, wouldn't you?
Absolutely. I mean, and you know, LeBron won't be doing it on his own, even if Wade doesn't play. I think that team can survive without Wade. I really do. I think, you know, Chris Bosh is very underrated. I think Chris Bosh is one of the most underrated players in the league. I think people forget about him because he's buried behind LeBron James and Dwayne Wade. I think people don't like him because he's not a traditional post-up power forward. He's that stretch. He can shoot the you know, the 18, 20-footer. He can take you off the dribble. I think Bosh is highly undervalued. I think Bosh, you know, got them to the finals last year when he came back from being injured with that abdominal strain. So I really think that, you know, they got a little more defense now with Chris the Birdman Anderson. You know, he's going to provide that spark of block shots. He gets big rebounds inside, putbacks, stuff like that. You know, and they have Ray Allen now who, you know, can shoot the ball, obviously. Rashard Lewis actually had a good game the other night. I think he had 18 points. So I think they have some guys, and they have some guys that understand basketball who would have been there. And obviously they're better with Dwayne Wade. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying, you know, Dwayne Wade doesn't make the Heat better, but I think as much as LeBron has taken the identity of the Heat at this point, I think they could survive. Maybe not against the Knicks. I think the Knicks could be a team, or the Pacers. I think they could beat the Bulls without Dwayne Wade.
That's fair enough. Nice stuff tonight. Thank you very much for being a part of it.
Absolutely, Phil. Thanks for having me as always.
My pleasure. And that's going to wrap it up for this edition of the Phil Nason Show. Special thanks to Andy Flint from sports-kings.com/pass the pill. Coming up tomorrow night, Jamie and Smith and I will be defending ourselves from last Thursday. On Friday, we'll be doing the baseball show. Until then, you all take care of yourselves. Be good. Most importantly, thanks for listening. Good night.
Ladies and gentlemen, my mother thanks you. My father thanks you, my sister thanks you, and I thank you.